Welcome to Carrickfergus Vineyard, a place of hope where lives are changing. We're a church in the heart of Carrickfergus, passionate about seeing people's lives changed by the love of Jesus. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services.
Good morning, everyone. It is lovely to be here. In a little while, Tammy is going to join us and we will introduce her more fully then. We are in John 11 this morning, so if anybody wants to turn to that in their Bibles or on their phones, that would be super. So as a church, we have been reflecting on these I am sayings of Jesus and the accompanying signs or miracles that went with them. So today we are in John 11, when through the miracle of Lazarus being raised from the dead, Jesus reveals, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. That's John 11 and verse 25. So as I was preparing for this morning, I was thinking a little bit about this statement made by Jesus, I am the resurrection and the life. And it made me think about how, as human beings, we can maybe understand or relate more easily to what it means to bring life. So we plant seeds and tend gardens, we grow crops and look after animals, we give birth and we raise children. I can understand even just a little how to nurture or care or how to bring life. I have less experience in bringing dead things back to life. I tried to think of some examples, and the closest that I could get this morning was I do have some traumatic childhood memories of dying goldfish. And the strategy in my house was, as they floated lifelessly on the top of the tank, was to throw a shot of whiskey in. Apparently this would help. And it did work. The fish would swim around. I kid you not, the fish would swim around on average for anything up to 3 minutes to a day, and then that was it. So that was one of my closest experiences. The other, and I know that when I admit this, I'm going to go up in your estimation of how cool I am. I was a member of the botany club whenever I was in school. Johnny's my husband, and he likes to mock me and tell me that if we had gone to school together, we would not even have been friends, never married. So it's really just as well that we met whenever I was 19. But Botany Club was run by the science teacher called Mrs. Edwards. And Mrs. Edwards gave up care of the greenhouse to a group of first years, which was her first mistake. Because we just used to go down there at random times and, I don't know, like water plants and do things. I don't really know what I learned in Botany Club, if I'm honest. But there was an incident one day where a plant got damaged by me, and it was broken, it was gone, and so we discarded the part of it that needed to go in the bin. And I thought, in order to try and prevent being discovered, I'll take the branch that is left and I'll just shove it in a pot, and at the very least I won't be found out. So you can imagine my surprise a few weeks later whenever I returned and discovered the branch that at that time had no roots had grown new roots. And it was still alive, and Mrs. Edgars never knew. So those are the closest experiences that I can think of whenever I think about this idea of life and resurrection. The type of resurrection we find in this story in John chapter 11 is infinitely more miraculous. The story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead is the last of the signs or the miracles in John's Gospel. And it comes just after Jesus has revealed himself as the Good Shepherd, and just before Jesus' anointing and triumphal entry into Jerusalem, which we'll think about next in a couple of weeks' time as part of Palm Sunday. Important to note, the disciples are in retreat at the point that this story happens. And the reason for that is because the Jews have accused Jesus just before of being demon-possessed and attempted to stone him for claiming to be God. And so at the start of John 11, Jesus receives these words, Lord, the one you love is sick. Lazarus, who was the brother of Mary and Martha, lives in Bethany in Judea. And that is the very place that Jesus and the disciples have just fled from. And so the possibility of returning to Bethany not only incredibly risky, but is for Jesus leads to certain death. And it puts all of the disciples in danger. And as we discover, Jesus has returned to bring Lazarus back to life. Does lead directly to his own death in Jerusalem. And it made me think, just as I was reflecting on this passage, about Jesus' own words. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Greater love has no man than this, to lay down his life for another. Jesus, in this story, laid down his life for Lazarus, and in turn for us all. And love is often linked to death in the Gospel of John. And that's also true in the story of this family, who are affectionately referred to as the Bethany family. Their relationship with Jesus does not prevent bad things from happening. Lazarus still dies. But as we see in this story, Jesus is present with them in their suffering. And he reveals to the disciples right from the very beginning, when we read through the story, about what is going to happen. So John 11, verse 4, Jesus says this: "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." This beloved family are part of the much bigger story that God is telling. But I discover in this story that he's also present in their brokenness and in their grief and in their suffering. And after Jesus has found out Lazarus is sick, something significant happens. In John 11, 5-6, we're told, "Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Yet when he heard Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. I don't know about you, but if someone I love is sick, my immediate response is I want to go. And so the fact that Jesus chooses to stay where he was for 2 more days is significant, and we need to pay attention to it. Jesus waited 2 days, and when he arrived, Lazarus had been in the tomb for 4 days already. Jewish belief at the time held that the soul left the body after 3 days. So there was no doubt that Lazarus was dead. It wasn't a situation where it could be, you know, construed or understood that, oh, he wasn't really dead. These 3 days had passed. So just in case we were wondering, or anyone at that time was in any doubt, Lazarus is really dead. And the other thing that we should be aware of is that Jewish belief held that there was a resurrection of the dead at the last day. So just one verse I want to share from Isaiah 25, verses 6-8. And it paints this picture for us. It says that on this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast. So this picture of a feast, that there will be rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. On this mountain, he will destroy the shroud that enfolds all peoples, the sheet that covers all nations. And it explains it in this next few words. He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will remove the disgrace of his people from all the earth. He will swallow up death forever. So Jewish belief held Lazarus was definitely dead. Jewish belief also held that Lazarus would be resurrected, but on the last day, whenever God would swallow up death. And today, one of the things that I know, this is just how when I read the Bible, it resonates with me, so I hope that you will journey with me. There's 3 places that are really significant in this story. And they are by the village, so when Jesus has not yet reached Bethany, outside the tomb. And I want to pick up on this idea of being at the table, and we're going to go a little bit into John 12. When Jesus arrives in Bethany, he is confronted first by Martha and then by Mary, and they come outside of the village to meet him, and later the other mourners who were there, because this family were very much loved, very much respected. There were a lot of people present after Lazarus died. But their words all carry something in common. If you had been here, if you had been here, things would have been different. If you had been here, Lazarus would not be dead. If you had been here. In other words, you didn't come. That's the accusation leveled to Jesus. You didn't show up. When they needed him the most, the perception was that Jesus didn't come. This did not look like love. And yet we know whenever we see the wider story, because we can step back and we can read it, that Jesus has already revealed his whole goal of coming, of waiting the 2 days, was so that God's glory could be seen. And we also know, because we live this side of the resurrection of Jesus, that ultimately Jesus went back and it cost him his life. But in their grief and misunderstanding, what Mary and Martha and the others in the crowd saw and said was, "You didn't come." And so Jesus encounters Martha by the village. And it's very clear what Martha is, a woman who is broken by her grief. And I want to pick up from verses 20 to 27 and just read a little bit of the text. "Lord," Martha says to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know, even now, God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." And in response to Martha's grief, what Jesus does is he pulls that hope of future resurrection into the present with his words. Martha is in fact face to face and loved by the one who is the fullness of life itself standing in front of her. And so for me, I look at that and it helps me to understand that resurrection isn't just a future hope. That is something that sits way out there. But actually, we as followers of Jesus are called to resurrection as a way of life, as a way of living, to live amidst the brokenness and the pain and the suffering that we might see or encounter, and to know Jesus, and in knowing him, to bring compassion and love and hope to others. And I'll be really honest, Jesus does not answer all my questions in this story. There's lots of things that I wish he would say, or I wish he would answer, or I wish were clearer. But after he encounters both Mary and Martha by the village, Jesus goes to the tomb of Lazarus and he stands outside the tomb and he weeps. And this beloved family are part of a much bigger picture that God is telling. But I love that Jesus is present in their story. Jesus, presumably, he's the Son of God, knew what he was about to do. And yet he stood outside the tomb and wept because his friend had died. And I don't know about you, but I need to know the Jesus who stands outside the tomb and weeps as much as I want to know the Jesus who raises Lazarus from the dead. I take great comfort and hope in that image. He understands. We have a great high priest who understands our weaknesses, who stands and who grieves and who laments, and outside that tomb acknowledges that all is not as it should be. My friend, Grace, died last year. And I remember in the weeks after her death, attending Thanksgiving and celebration events. And oh goodness, was this woman worth celebrating? And I did, but I remember standing there and feeling angry and numb. And the weight of grief felt so heavy. And yet I was not without hope, because Grace deeply loved Jesus and everyone who met her knew that. And so when I read this story, not only do I identify with Martha, who carries both the weight of grief, but also the hope that Jesus is who he says he is, in her brokenness and in her hope that God was not finished yet. And so when I think back, and even when I think about those memories and those moments and standing and reflecting on my friend, I can resonate with Martha, but I cling to that image of Jesus standing outside the tomb before he called Lazarus his name, and acknowledging that there needs to be space for grief and for lament in our stories. And we find next in the story that Jesus commanded the people to take the stone away, and then he prayed these words: "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out. Lazarus walked. Lazarus breathed life again. Lazarus was raised by hearing Jesus. John 10:3 reminds us that he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And I love that it's on hearing the voice of Jesus that Lazarus walks out of the tomb. And Jesus shows that death does not have the final word, because even death couldn't separate Lazarus from the infinite and abundant life and love of Jesus. The seventh and final sign in the Gospel of John is also a sign of what is to come. That, as we know, this side of the story, it was a sign of Jesus's crucifixion and resurrection. And we're told that some of those who saw the resurrection of Lazarus put their faith in Jesus. But others reported it to the Pharisees, and the Sanhedrin met, and on that day they decided that Jesus's life, they plotted to take his life and Lazarus's too. And so Lazarus walking out of his tomb was ultimately the start of Jesus walking towards his. And I often wonder, whenever I read the Bible and I read the stories of people who witnessed miracles, who sat as Jesus taught, who were either the people or members of the families that Jesus healed. This is just how my brain works. I often think, what happened next? What did their lives look like? How were they changed? And with the Bethany family, we get a very rare insight into what actually happens next. Because at the start of John chapter 12, it tells us, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honour. Martha served. Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. One of the first recorded things that they did after Lazarus was raised from the dead was they sat down and they ate. They shared a meal. They sat in the presence of Jesus. They honoured him. Martha served. Lazarus reclined at the table. Mary anointed Jesus' feet. And I listen to that and I think, what a beautiful picture of a family whose lives were transformed not just by the raising of Lazarus, but by being friends of Jesus. Their lives were transformed because they were in his presence. It wasn't just about the miracles that he did or the teaching. They were transformed by knowing him. And so for me, this family from Bethany serve as a reminder and example that life is not a story just about what is going on for us. And that matters. We matter, and what is going for us matters. But that life is not just that story. And we are part of a much bigger story that God is telling. Jesus is present with this family when they came and spoke to him outside the village, whenever they stood outside the tomb, and whenever they were at the table. And by the village, with Martha and Mary, I see that life on this earth will not be without suffering and brokenness, but that we have a God who we can trust to be present. I see that resurrection isn't just a future hope, but that God calls us to life now, to transform lives that reflect his love and his compassion and his kindness. Outside the tomb and with all who mourn, I see Jesus who stands and weeps, that there is space for grief and for lament in our stories. And with the rolling away of the stone, there is also space for hope and for his glory. I see that death does not have the final victory. And I hold on to the hope that one day, just like Lazarus, I get to hear him call my name. At the table, I see this Bethany family utterly transformed by the love and presence of Jesus. And the same invitation is given to us. We are invited to the table. We are invited to know him, to love him, to receive his love, and to honour him with our lives. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" Many of you will know that Johnny and I have the privilege of working for Stand By Me, and as a church, Carrick Vineyard has so faithfully supported Stand By Me since our church was planted. And this summer, a group of our amazing young people are going to be visiting our project in Romania to serve the young people and families there. And so this morning, I'm really delighted to invite our friend and director of our work in Romania, Cammy, to come up and join me. And Cammy is just going to share a little bit about the work in Romania. Let's use that one too. Cammy, welcome. We are so excited that you've been able to join us this morning. And so I would love to begin just by asking you a little bit more about who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Cami Cismaru. I come from Romania. I was born in Romanian. And I'm the director of Stand By Me in Romania. But I love very much to go by Mami Cami, which is my favorite title.
Okay, Mami Cami. Yes. It's very apt that you're here on Mother's Day as well.
Yeah.
So we have been thinking this morning, obviously, about this story from John chapter 11 and how Jesus' words and actions bring hope in the midst of brokenness, and ultimately how his compassion changes people. Would you take us back to 1999? And tell us a little bit just about how things began in Romania.
Yes. Well, back in 1998, I was working in a city called Slatina, very close to the village where I came from. I was involved with the church mission there. I was working for like 6 years. And part of my job was to take summer teams to the orphanages. That was the time when I became very aware of the problems in our community. That was the time when I learned that in that city we had like 5 orphanages. Children were put in different orphanages according to their ages. And time, after visiting and seeing their problem, I became friends with those kids in the orphanages. They came and told me about their abuse, their problems. And I just gradually felt called to do something about them. And one time, my sister and I went to one of the orphanages and decided to take home a little girl called Juana for the weekend. She was 4 years old. She did not speak. And we took her home with us, and just by singing with her, she started to say words. And that was so touching to us. We were so excited, and we thought, oh, we're gonna do this. We're gonna take all kinds of kids and help them and teach them and solve their problems. But the real problem was when we took her home to the state orphanage, she would just scream and grab onto us, and she would not let us go. So that was very traumatic, and we learned very quickly that that was not the way to help. So, but we still felt called to do something. And I shared with my friends that I wanted to do something for the children. I didn't know what, but that problem was too huge and we wanted to step in. So to make a long story short, my friends helped me get in contact with Stand By Me eventually. And the director of Stand By Me UK came to Romania, saw the orphanages, saw the need. And he gave my sister and I the blessing to start a ministry in Romania for children. And it was in 1999 when we took home the first 4 babies from the baby orphanage. And we had started at my parents' house to begin with, because we didn't have a location. And there we cared for these beautiful 4 babies, baby girls. We wanted to help more, obviously, and through the help of Stand By Me, we were able to purchase land in the village where we were based. And 3 years later, we had this building up, then we started to take more children. 2 sisters. Then 3 baby girls again, and the last one. 7 of these girls were babies, so we had them at a very young age. However, the problems that they came with were big, and they brought many challenges. And they were our family for the last 25 years.
Wow.
And just random pictures from them growing up. My whole family was involved in this. First my sister, and then when we moved onto the new building, my sister-in-law decided to leave her job in the city. She had a good job, but she decided to join us, and she became one of the mothers. So there were three mothers: Mommy Kami, Mommy Livy, and Mommy Jenny. So the girls grew, obviously, and this is not really recent, but they're all grown up. 6 of these girls graduated from university. All of them graduated from high school. 3 of them are married. We have 3 grandkids in the family, and they are just our everyday joy.
Cami, would you tell us a little bit just about some of the challenges faced by the children and the kids in the community? Because obviously you've raised the girls, but then the work of Stand By Baby Mania has grown over the years as well.
Yes. Well, we live in a small community. Our village has only 1,500 people, so we pretty much know everybody. Everybody knows us. So living in that town, I became very aware of the problems the kids in the community had. I was volunteering in the church, and I had one time a talk with a girl who was in grade 8. And I asked her if she was going to go to high school, and she said no, because our principal told us that we're not smart enough, so we cannot go to high school. And I said, but do you want to go to high school? And she said, yeah, I'd like to go to high school. And then nothing can stop you, you can go to high school. And I gave her books, and she started to study. Well, later on, this girl made it to high school, made it to university. She's now married and has kids. But anyway, that was my first interaction with the children in the community, and made me realize the needs there, the poverty, the neglect, the abuse, the incapability of the school system in Romania to really help the kids achieve high. And so in 2004, we had a strategic planning meeting, and we decided to do something for the community. And you know, although we were so determined to do this, I was a little reluctant of where are we going to do that, you know, the building and the facilities. And it was just amazing how that worked, because we had a nice building in our village, which was taken by the communists from the so-called rich people. But then after the revolution, this building was given back to the owner, and she had, like, the owner had 3 kids, she could not use the building, and she decided to sell this building. So this is the old building, which we were able to purchase in 2005. And a couple of years later, this building was changed. We added a second floor, and we opened this building in 2006 for the children of Dobron.
And how does then this space and the opportunities that are created there and for you as staff, how does the Denisa Care Center and the care that's provided there make a difference for the kids within the community?
Yes, I believe it makes a big difference by now. After 17 years of serving here, when we started, a little more than 50% of the children made it to high school. And now that we have more than 50 children in our program, and over the years over 300 children were assisted in our program, 99% of our children go to either high school or vocational school. In Romania, the school program is very short. Children go to school for 4 to 6 hours, so it's very important for kids to have help with their homework. And parents, many of them are illiterate, many of them don't have enough education, so this is where we step in. Kids come to us after school, we do homework with them, we give them a snack, a good meal, and we do so many more other activities that they never get to do in school. Most importantly, we try to teach them about God in an Orthodox community, And that is something that the kids really enjoy and something that makes us, I guess, special in that community.
Wonderful, thank you, Cammy. So we obviously are delighted that a number of our young people are going to be coming out to spend some time in Romania in the summer. Just as they get ready to come and serve, how can we support them as a church family? Because you've hosted many teams over the years, but how can we support them as a church family as they prepare to come?
Well, a big thank you for wanting to do that. We can't wait to meet you all. Yeah, you can pray. Obviously, working with kids involves many risks, and it's very important to pray for their safety and protection and good health. Fundraise to help them come there. And I think it's very important that we as Christians share with others the good news about Jesus and the good news Christians do. I noticed in the small community when something bad happens, the news spreads so fast in the village, everybody knows about it. But, you know, somebody does something good, it takes a longer time to reach to everybody. So if you can share, tell others about Stand By Me, Romania, other countries where Stand By Me serves, I think that would be helpful.
Thank you, Carmen. And just two more questions for you. Could you share one or two stories of the children that you care for and just about where they are now or the difference that's been made?
Yes, we have many, many stories. I stay here all day. So I have to tell you all about them. From the kids that came to the NISA, it's a joy to see some of them coming back to the community. That really warms my heart. And we have a teacher, actually, who works in school with a grade four. So we work with her. I mean, she was one of our kids, a Stand By Me kid. And then we have a nurse who works with our family doctor. She's a nurse. She was one of our kids. And then we have two assistant pharmacists who work in the community. And that is just wonderful to see that.
Would you tell us a little about Ionella and Luisa and Antonia? Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Ionella was one of the House of Hope girls. She was only 11 months old when she came. She did not even crawl when she was that age. And now she's a university graduate. She graduated from electric engineering, actually.
Wow.
And she is our social media manager. So if you go on social media and like our posts, you should know that she does all that. And then we have two little girls from Denisa who just joined our program, the older one 2 years ago, the younger one last year. And it was just so amazing to see a progress in just such a short time. As Luisa came after the pandemic when she was supposed to do grade one online, and obviously she hasn't done anything because her parents didn't have computers, internet, and so on. And she came to us not knowing how to read or write. And it took almost a year when one day in school, kids told the teacher, "Hey teacher, you know that Luisa knows how to read." And she said, "Oh yeah, I didn't know she does that." And when the teacher asked her to read, she was fluent in reading. And that happened because of us, because of our teacher, Bianca, who took time every day to work one-on-one with Luisa. And Luisa and Antonia came in our program last March, but they're the most excited kids to be in our program.
Oh.
So we believe that they have the same opportunity as any other child in our community, kids that come to our program. So we expect them to do great things.
Wonderful. Cammy, obviously today is a significant day for us as we celebrate Mother's Day, and I believe it was celebrated in Romania on Friday, is that correct? Just as we finish this morning, and having listened to some of your story and your family's story of adopting these little girls, what does it mean for you to be a mum?
I think it means everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I got my share of messages a couple of days ago. And, you know, we had many, many challenges through the years. But just to see now that all of them grow and all of them are so grateful for what they receive from us. Just looking at my WhatsApp group and see their messages on Mother's Day and see how they realize what we've done for them. Mm-hmm. And I loved kids all my life. I love babies. But just to see them from being little to be like us, adults and with children, it's just a big, big joy.
Tammy, thank you so much for now sharing. Over to Paul and Chantel, but thank you so much just for the opportunity and for us to share. Thank you for inviting Cameron to be here this morning. A big thank you to Carrick Vineyard, as we always acknowledge whenever we have the opportunity to share. Stand By Me couldn't do what we do without the support of churches like Carrick Vineyard and those of you who sponsor. So just always want to acknowledge that and say thank you. It makes such an incredible difference in the lives of the children we care for.
Thanks for listening to the Carrick Fergus Vineyard podcast. If you'd like to find out more about our church, please visit our website, carrickfergusvineyard.org.